Chapter 8. Stuyvesant led them straight back toward the conference room. Nagley walked next to Reacher, close by his shoulder in the narrow corridors.
"Great suit," she whispered.
"First one I ever wore," he whispered back. "We on the same page with this?"
"On the same page and out of a job, probably," she said. "That is, if you're thinking what I'm thinking."
They turned a corner, walked on. Stuyvesant stopped and shepherded them into the conference room, and came in after them and hit the lights and closed the door. Reacher and Nagley sat together on one side of the long table, and Stuyvesant sat next to Froelich on the other, like he foresaw an adversarial element to the conversation.
"Explain,"
he said. Silence for a second.
"This is definitely not an inside job," Nagley said.
Reacher nodded. "Although we were fooling ourselves by ever thinking it was entirely one thing or the other, it was always both. But it was useful shorthand. The real question was where the balance lay. Was it fundamentally an inside job with trivial help from the outside? Or was it basically an outside job with trivial help from the inside?"
"The trivial help being what?" Stuyvesant said.
"A potential insider needed a thumbprint that wasn't his. A potential outsider needed a way to get the second message inside this building."
"And you've concluded that it's the outsider?"
Reacher nodded again. "Which is absolutely the worst news we could have gotten. Because whereas an insider messing around is merely a pain in the ass, an outsider is truly dangerous." Stuyvesant looked away.
"Who?"
"No idea," Reacher said. "Just some outsider with a loose one-time connection to an insider, sufficient to get the message in, and nothing more.
The insider being one of the cleaners."
"Or all of them,"
Froelich said.
"I assume so, yes," Reacher said. "You sure about this?"
"Completely."
"How?"
Stuyvesant asked. Reacher shrugged. "Lots of reasons," he said. "Some of them small, one of them big."
"Explain,"
Stuyvesant said again. "I look for simplicity," Reacher told him. Stuyvesant nodded.
"So do I. I hear hoofbeats, I think horses, not zebras. But the simple explanation here is an insider trying to get under Froelich's skin."
"Not really," Reacher said. "The chosen method is way too complex for that. They'd be doing all the usual stuff instead, the easy stuff. I'm sure we've all seen it before. Mysterious communications failures, computer crashes, bogus alarm calls to non-existent addresses in the bad part of town. She arrives, calls in for backup, nobody shows. She gets scared, she panics on the radio. A recording gets made and starts to circulate. Any law enforcement department has got a stack of examples a yard high."
"Including the military police?"
"Sure. Especially with women officers." Stuyvesant shook his head.
"No," he said. "That's conjecture. I'm asking how you know."
"I know because nothing happened today."
"Explain,"
Stuyvesant said for the third time. "This is a smart opponent," Reacher said. "He's bright, and he's confident. He's in command. But he threatened something, and he didn't deliver."
"So? He failed, is all."
"No," Reacher said. "He didn't even try. Because he didn't know he had to, because he didn't know his letter arrived today." Silence in the room.
"He expected it to arrive tomorrow," Reacher said. "It was mailed on Friday. Friday to Monday is pretty fast for the U.S. mail.
It was a fluke. He banked on Friday to Tuesday." Nobody spoke.
"He's an outsider," Reacher said. "He's got no direct connection to the department, and therefore he's unaware his threat showed up a day early, or he'd have delivered today for sure, because he's an arrogant son of a bitch, and he wouldn't have wanted to let himself down. Count on it. So he's out there somewhere waiting to deliver on his threat tomorrow, which is exactly when he expected he'd have to all along."
"Great," Froelich said. "There'll be another contributor reception tomorrow."
Stuyvesant was quiet for a beat.
"So what do you suggest?" he asked.
"We have to cancel," Froelich said.
"No, I meant long-term strategy," Stuyvesant said. "And we can't cancel anything. We can't just give up and say we can't protect our principle."
"You have to tough it out," Reacher said. "It'll only be a demonstration designed to torment you. My guess is it'll specifically avoid Armstrong altogether. It'll penetrate somewhere he has been or will be some other time.
Like where?
Froelich asked. His house, maybe, Reacher said. Either here or in Bismarck. His office. Somewhere. It'll be theatrical, like these damn messages. It'll be some spectacular thing in a place Armstrong just was or is heading for next. Because right now this whole thing is a contest. And the guy promised a demonstration, and I think he'll keep his word. But I'm betting the next move will be parallel somehow. Otherwise, why phrase the message the way he did? Why talk about a demonstration? Why not just go ahead and say, Armstrong, you're going to die today? Froelich made no reply. We have to identify this guy, Stuyvesant said. What do we know about him?
Silence in the room.
Well, we know we're fooling ourselves again, Reacher said, or else still speaking in shorthand, because it's not a him, it's a them. It's a team. It always is. It's two people. That's a guess, Stuyvesant said.
You wish, Reacher said back. It's provable.
How?
It bothered me way back that there was the thumbprint on the letter, along with clear evidence of latex gloves. Why would he swing both ways? Either his prints are on file or they aren't. But it's two people. The thumbprint guy has never been printed. The gloves guy has been. It's two people working together.
Stuyvesant looked very tired. It was nearly 2 o'clock in the morning.
You don't really need us anymore, Negley said. This isn't an internal investigation now. This is out there in the world.
No, Stuyvesant said. It's still internal as long as there's something to get from the cleaners. They must have met with these people. They must know who they are. Negley shrugged.
You gave them lawyers. You made it very difficult.
They had to have counsel, for God's sake, Stuyvesant said. They were arrested. That's the law. It's their Sixth Amendment right.
I guess it is, Negley said. So tell me, is there a law for when the vice president gets killed before his inauguration? Yes, there is,
Froelich said quietly.
The 20th Amendment. Congress chooses another one.
Negley nodded.
Well, I sure hope they've got their shortlist ready.
Silence in the room.
You should bring in the FBI, Reacher said.
I will, Stuyvesant replied, when we've got names, not before.
They've already seen the letters.
Only in the labs. Their left hand doesn't know what their right hand is doing.
You need their help.
And I'll ask for it. Soon as we've gotten names, I'm going to give them to the Bureau on a silver platter, but I'm not going to tell them where they came from. I'm not going to tell them we were internally compromised. And I'm sure as hell not bringing them in while we still are internally compromised.
Is it that big of a deal?
Are you kidding? CIA had a problem with that Ames guy, remember? The Bureau got hold of it and they laughed up their sleeves for years. Then they had their own problems with that Hansen guy and they didn't look so smart after all. This is the big leagues, Reacher. Right now the Secret Service is number one by a very healthy margin. We've only recorded one defeat in our entire history, and that was almost 40 years ago. So we're not about to take a dive down the league table just for the fun of it.
Reacher said nothing.
And don't get all superior with me, Stuyvesant said. Don't tell me the Army reacted any different. I don't recall you guys running to the Bureau for assistance. I don't recall your embarrassing little secrets all over the Washington Post.
Reacher nodded. Most of the Army's embarrassments were cremated, or 6 feet under. Or sitting in a stockade somewhere, too scared even to open their mouths. Or back home, too scared to tell their own mothers why. He had arranged some of those circumstances himself.
So we'll take it a step at a time, Stuyvesant said. Prove these guys are outsiders. Get their names from the cleaners. Lawyers or no lawyers.
Froelich shook her head.
First priority is getting Armstrong to Midnight, alive.
It's only going to be a demonstration, Reacher said.
I heard you before, she said. But it's my call, and you're just guessing. All we've got is 9 words on a piece of paper, and your interpretation might be plain wrong. I mean, what better demonstration would there be than actually doing it? Really, getting to him would demonstrate his vulnerability, wouldn't it? I mean, what better way is there of demonstrating it?
Negley nodded.
And it would be a way of hedging their bets, also. An attempt that fails could be passed off as a demonstration, maybe. You know, to save face.
If you're right to begin with, Stuyvesant said.
Reacher said nothing.
The meeting came to an end a couple of minutes later. Stuyvesant made Froelich run through Armstrong's schedule for the day. It was an amalgam of familiar parts. First, intelligence briefings from the CIA at home, like on Friday morning. Then afternoon transition meetings on the Hill, the same as most days. Then the evening reception at the same hotel as Thursday. Stuyvesant noted it all down and went home just before 2:30 in the morning, left Froelich on her own at the long table in the bright light and the silence, opposite Reacher and Negley.
"Advice?" she said.
"Go home and sleep," Reacher said.
"Great. And then do exactly what you've been doing," Negley said. "He's okay in his house. He's okay in his office. Keep the tents in place and the transfers are okay, too. What about the hotel reception? Keep it short and take a lot of care."
Froelich nodded.
"All I can do, I guess." "Are you good at your job?"
Negley asked. Froelich paused.
"Yes," she said. "I'm pretty good."
"No, you're not," Reacher said. "You're the best. The absolute best there has ever been. You're so damn good, it's unbelievable."
"That's how you've got to think," Negley said. "Pump yourself up. Get to the point where it's impossible to think that these jerky guys with their silly notes are going to get within a million miles of you."
Froelich smiled briefly.
"Is this military-style training?" "For me it was," Negley said. "Reacher was born thinking that way."
Froelich smiled again.
"Okay," she said. "Home and sleep. Big day tomorrow."
Washington, D.C. is quiet and empty in the middle of the night, and it took just 2 minutes to reach Negley's hotel and only another 10 to get back to Froelich's house. Her street was crowded with parked cars. They looked like they were asleep, dark and still and inert and heavily dewed with cold mist. The Suburban was more than 18 feet long, and they had to go 2 whole blocks before they found a space big enough for it. They locked it up and walked back together in the chill, made it to the house, and opened the door and stepped inside. The lights were still on. The heating was still running hard. Froelich paused in the hallway.
"Are we okay?"
she asked.
"About earlier?"
"We're fine," he said.
"I just don't want us to get our signals mixed."
"I don't think they're mixed."
"I'm sorry I disagreed with you about the demonstration."
"It's your call. Only you can make it."
"I had other boyfriends," she said. "You know, after."
He said nothing.
"And Joe had other girlfriends. He wasn't all that shy, really."
"But he left his stuff here."
"Does that matter?"
"I don't know. Got to mean something."
"He's dead, Reacher. Nothing can affect him now."
"I know." She was quiet for a second.
"I'm going to make tea. You want some?"
He shook his head. "I'm going to bed." She stepped into the living room on her way to the kitchen, and he walked upstairs, closed the guest room door quietly behind him, and opened up the closet. Stripped off Joe's suit and put it back on the wire dry cleaner's hanger, hung it on the rail, took off the tie and rolled it and put it back on the shelf, took off the shirt and dropped it on the closet floor. He didn't need to save it. There were 4 more on the rail, and he didn't expect to be around longer than 4 more days. He peeled off the socks and dropped them on top of the shirt, walked into the bathroom, wearing only his boxers. He took his time in there, and when he came out, Froelich was standing in the guest room doorway, wearing a nightgown. It was white cotton, longer than a T-shirt, but not a whole lot longer. The hallway light behind her made it transparent. Her hair was tousled. Without shoes, she looked smaller. Without makeup, she looked younger. She had great legs, a wonderful shape. She looked soft and firm all at the same time.
"He broke up with me," she said. "It was his choice, not mine."
"Why?"
"He met somebody he preferred."
"Who?"
"Doesn't matter who.
Nobody you ever heard of, just somebody." "Why didn't you say so?"
"Denial, I guess. Trying to protect myself, maybe. And trying to protect his memory in front of his brother."
"He wasn't nice about it?"
"Not very."
"How did it happen?"
"He just told me one day."
"And walked out?"
We weren't really living together. He spent time here, I spent time there, but we always kept separate places. His stuff is still here because I wouldn't let him come back to get it. I wouldn't let him in the door. I was hurt and angry with him.